Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Okay, did you talk to your mom or to grandma yesterday? Or maybe if your mom isn't with us, maybe you looked at old family photos. Thinking about family and family history often happens in this Mother's Day, Father's Day corridor. If you've ever been curious to trace your roots on your family tree, now might be the perfect time to do it. Think about it. Many of us are looking for projects to occupy our time, and some of us are spending a lot more time with family members, whether you're at home together or talking over Zoom more often. Joining us to guide us through getting started and to share their expertise are genealogist Megan Smolnick. She's the former chief family historian for Ancestry.com and the author of four books, including Hey America, Your Roots Are Showing. She's been called, quote, the Indiana Jones of genealogy. Megan, welcome to All of It.
Oh, thanks so much.
And we're also joined by Philip Sutton from the New York Public Library's Milstein Division of U.S. History, Local History, and Genealogy, where he works with people like you and me who come in and are just setting out to discover what they can find out about their family tree. Philip, welcome as well.
Thank you. Hello, Allison.
So listeners, have you worked on your family tree? Have you made any great discoveries? We'd love to hear them. 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280, or maybe you're stumped and in need of some advice, or you just want to get started and you need a boost. You can call us for those questions as well, or you can tweet to us at @AllOfItWNYC, or you can always leave us a message on Instagram. We have the same handle for both, @AllOfItWNYC. So Megan, let's just start at the beginning. Where do most people start their genealogy work, and what do you need to know to start?
Well, you know, as you were alluding, this is weirdly the perfect time to get started because, yes, many of us are trapped at home. And there's two things that are a great way to start. One is to talk with your elders. And when I say that, I mean anybody who's even 20 minutes older than you, because they are living libraries. They can save you so much time in your research if you just chat with them. Kind of the trick is to ask specific questions, because a lot of times older folks think that we're not interested in their stories. They're afraid they're boring us. So unless you kind of gently prod, you may just get kind of broad generalizations. But, you know, if you ask specific questions about, hey, Grandma, how'd you meet Grandpa, that kind of thing, you might be surprised at the stories that spill out. And the other thing is, if you're trapped at home, go on a treasure hunt. Go looking in your drawers. Look at that box that you stuffed in the back of the closet. So many of us are sitting on old photos or documents, high school diplomas, whatever. There's so much there that we usually have in our own homes that we can use to get a running start.
So, Philip, you know, Megan alluded to why stories are significant. For you, why do you think stories are so important for jumpstarting the process of tracing a family tree?
I think stories are important because we have to start writing things down. If you're going to research your family history, it's good to think about yourself and start writing down things about you, why you want to research your family history, why this is interesting, why setting a research goal. And then stories are good because stories, you know, we make connections with previous generations. If you're talking to your grandparents, you'll discover things that you didn't know. You can write those down and you can use those as a way to start researching your family history. So, for instance, if you're talking, if you're interviewing an older family member, they might talk about a relation that was involved in sports or one that who served in the Second World War, things like that. These stories kind of become a narrative because family history is genealogy can be about pedigree charts, writing names down, making connections, but it's the stories are the gist of it. The stories are what makes genealogy interesting because family stories become a part of local history. They're part of national history. And I think it's they're the main reason that people become interested in family history research.
That's so interesting. Megan, you alluded to this, but I want to follow up on it. What are the important questions to ask your family members that might not seem obvious?
Well, as I said, anything that gets a little bit specific, like you can ask Granddad about, hey, can you tell me about your military service? But usually you know enough to say, hey, didn't you serve in Germany during World War II? You know, if you can give some little specifics like that, don't just say, hey, tell me about your school days. Say, what memory stands out most from the time you were in school? If you ask slightly more specific questions, you might be surprised at what spills out.
You know, so interesting. And one of the reasons I brought the subject up in our meeting is this was my, we did this with my son. His school for remote learning had suggested a passion project. And we decided, let's trace the family tree as part of the passion project. And one of the things I found, which was interesting, and you guys might want to weigh in on this, is there was a family nickname of an uncle, which I never put together with a person that I had found, because this uncle was known as Uncle Buck. And I kept hearing about Uncle Buck. And then I realized that Buckley was his middle name. And I found it like way down deep in some file somewhere. But I hadn't put together that Uncle Buck was Wilson Buckley. So sometimes you have to do a little detective work.
That's exactly what it is. It's your own personal history mystery, and you get to play detective, and that's why it's so addicting. I just got to warn your listeners, once you get started, it's a really slippery slope. Many people, you know, look up a few years later and go, whoa, but that was a lot of fun.
It's so true. Hey, let's take a couple calls. Brooke is calling us from Brooklyn on line one. Hi, Brooke. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really am got into this, and I traced my ancestors back all the way to the Mayflower, which was terribly exciting. But now I'm tracing my daughter back, and she is Native American, and I'm tracing her because I'm trying to establish some tribal enrollment. So it actually isn't just fun. It's like a major thing that could affect her life. Mm-hmm. And I'm really stuck on one of her relatives who seems to have come over from Canada. And it's just so confusing looking at Dakota Territory as opposed to North Dakota. And I don't know. The Indian census rolls are actually amazing. They took Indian census every year. But I don't know where to go when I'm stuck on an ancestor.
Megan, what advice do you have for someone who gets stuck specifically, or if somebody gets stuck with Native American heritage? That's got to be tough.
Native American, it is challenging. But yes, it's true. Those census that they were done on an annual basis, they can be incredible. But also they can be very challenging because you have both the original name and then sort of the anglicized version of the name. And sometimes there's some flexibility in terms of when people were born and that kind of thing. And so it can get tricky, you know, following the lines. But yeah, you have to be very methodical about it. I mean, the best thing I do when I get stuck, I feel it's my job as a professional genealogist to pound as hard as I can and brainstorm and come up with other ways. And then I just kind of step back for a while. If you just get really stuck, step back for a while. And then go back and revisit it. I know it sounds strange, even if it's just 2 days later, you'd be surprised how often that's all it takes. You just need a fresh look, or share it with one of your fellow genie friends, because a fresh pair of eyes never hurts. So, yeah, it sounds a little counterintuitive to actually stop for a brief period, but you'd be surprised how often that works.
Thanks so much for calling in. Oh, go ahead, Philip. Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry, I was going to make a suggestion.
Absolutely.
I think you know, when you do hit these brick walls, and we as librarians in the Milton Division, we're subject specialists, we're not genealogists, I'll hold my hands up, but we get to hear kind of a lot of the questions, and what we provide access to is, and what we do a lot is referrals, so we provide access to recommendations for guidebooks, how-tos, manuals, guidebooks, where you can use to educate yourself when it comes to doing this kind of research, but also recommendations for online guides. So something like the Family Search Wiki might be a really good resource to use to do a little bit more research into the history of Native Americans, into the history of the records and places. Can I plug a service we offer?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. We do reference all the time. The library, as you know, the physical manifestation of the library is closed, but librarians, we're working from home right now, and we do email reference all the time. So we have an email, history@nypl.org. You can reach out to us with any of these kind of brick wall questions. We can endeavor to help you answer them, and if we can't answer them, we can refer to other people who may have the answers. So that's just one way you can move forward. Because sometimes talking to other people, as Megan says, it can be really helpful.
My guests are Megan Smolniak and Philip Sutton. We're talking about genealogy and following our family trees as something interesting to do with your family during this time when we're all spending so much time together. Our phone number is 646-435-7280 if you'd like to share a story, a discovery you found, or maybe you have a question. Let's go to Michael, who is calling us from Manhattan. Hi, Michael. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi there. Basically, my family's Jewish and immigrated before World War II, and I've been working on this project since the credit crisis, mm-hmm. on and off, of course, and I've used almost all the services. I found Genie years ago. I thought it was really easy to use, and it sends me reminders of everyone's birthday, which is great, but I've been trying to trace back the immigration records where I know my grandfather's family was here from the 1850s, but finding sort of import records or ship records, I've been able to trace back most of the censuses to the 1800s, but more than that, it's been difficult.
We have another person who's stumped, Megan. Did you hear anything in there that rang any bells that you thought maybe try this avenue or that avenue?
Well, I mean, immigration records exist on a national level back to 1820, but the ones sort of pre-Ellis Island era are pretty skimpy, even if you can find your ancestors in them. You'll be lucky if it gives you anything more than maybe their age and the country that they came from. But it's true. Your best opportunity is to try to find their naturalization records and see if there's any other details that might help you find their arrival records. Barring that, go into surround and conquer mode. Very few of our ancestors came here solo. I mean, not only did whole, you know, families kind of emigrate here often two or three at a time, but sometimes whole villages came here. And so if you do research to find out who was associated with them, who were their neighbors, their, you know, cousins, that kind of thing, if you research them, you'll almost inevitably find somebody who came a little more recently when the records were a bit more detailed. And so if you can't, say, find the town of origin in your ancestors' relatives, you know, records because they came so early, try to find, you know, a nephew who came from the old country 20 years later.
Michael, good luck to you. Let's go to Liz from Inwood. Hi, Liz. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hello?
Hi, Liz. Yeah, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Cemeteries are an amazing source of information on how people are related to each other. Yesterday I had a perfect socially distanced visit with my whole family because they're all 6 feet under. We have a large family plot in one of the huge cemeteries in Queens, and I was finally able to put together how some of my cousins are related to me because, unlike the cemetery map that I have, the headstones have, particularly with women, their middle name, their maiden name. It's a Jewish cemetery, so most of the tombstones have the Hebrew name, which includes daughter or son of, usually just the father, but sometimes the father and the mother. So you can figure out how people are related to each other based on their names. And that just, particularly since women often change their names, it becomes hard to figure out, oh, this person is a genetic relative. They just changed their name when they got married. So it was really interesting between the birth dates and the death dates to put together, you know, who was named after whom, who's related to whom, and how. It's just a trove of information if you have a family plot.
Liz, you have a really wicked and kind of awesome sense of humor. And two, thank you for sharing that tip. We really appreciate it. Megan, Liz was able to actually visit a cemetery. A lot of people can't do that. Are there options for people who can to see grave sites, to see what's on headstones, even if they can't go?
Oh, sure. I mean, one of the most popular websites for genealogists is called Find a Grave. It's just findagrave.com. And people, it's been manned by volunteers around the globe. And there are just millions and millions of cemetery records that have been up there. And many people do take photos of tombstones, although you have to remember that some of our ancestors couldn't afford tombstones. But that said, Liz is absolutely right. genealogists love cemeteries, and even if there's no tombstone, there can be information at the cemetery's, what they call the sexton office. So, for instance, way back when I tracked down Annie Moore, who was the first immigrant to ever arrive at Ellis Island. And when I finally found her tombstone, she was also buried in Queens. And there was no tombstone because the family couldn't afford it. But there were 11 people in her plot when I got the records from the cemetery itself. And what Liz has said is true. You could figure out how people were related. And in fact, even one child in there was a neighbor's child, because some of her ancestors were so poor that they couldn't afford their own plots. And so you will often find that somebody has their nephew or a neighbor's child or, you know, further flung relatives buried in one plot. So it's a tremendous tool. And even now, you can often reach them via email. And sometimes a number of individual cemeteries even have search engines specific to their cemetery on site. And mm-hmm. some even have search services.
On line six, we have a colleague of yours, Philip. Lauren is calling us from Huntington. Hi, Lauren. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to quickly put in a plug for the Center for Jewish History, where I work. We have a genealogy institute, which, like New York Public, is currently closed. But our two genealogy librarians are busy at work from home, answering email inquiries at gi@cjh.org, doing weekly Facebook Live sessions on various topics on Tuesdays at 3:30 that we call genealogy coffee break, because they're only about 15, 20 minutes long. But another great thing that they're doing is scheduling Zoom workshops with outside organizations, primarily senior centers, for people who are, somewhat isolated, and they're organizing these online group workshops for seniors. And also, I should mention, you don't have to be Jewish to take advantage of any of this assistance.
Lauren, thank you so much. Yeah, Philip, she brings up an interesting point. What about local libraries? If you want to go to your local library, what kind of questions should you, once they open up, or if they're working remotely, should you ask a local librarian?
We help people all the time. We have all sorts of different researchers coming in. A good way to think about when you're doing research is, it's tempting, a lot of people come to see us in the Milstein division, because they're kind of driven by this desire to do the research, but they haven't necessarily prepared for it. So one good idea is to do the preparation, is to write down names, places, and dates, and do, as Megan said, talk to your family and get these kind of names, places, dates, and stories that can then help you get on the databases. So Ancestry, for instance, has a library edition, which is available in all libraries in New York and is currently accessible from New York Public Library online for free. If you have a library card, a New York Public Library card, which you can get if you go to nypl.org. But really the thing is, it's about becoming information literate. It's about thinking about what is driving my research. How do I ask a question? How do I ask the librarian a question? How do I decide what it is that I want to learn before I go in? And that can make your research a little more kind of easy.
My guests are Philip Sutton, New York Public Library's Milstein Division of U.S. History, Local History, and Genealogy, and superstar genealogist Megan Smolnik. We're talking about tracing our family roots. Our lines are still full. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll continue this conversation. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. My guests this hour are genealogist Megan Smolnik. She's the former chief family historian for Ancestry.com and the author of Hey America, Your Roots Are Showing. And Philip Sutton's also joining us from the New York Public Library's Milstein Division of U.S. History, Local History, and Genealogy. If you'd like to share something that you found with your family tree, or maybe you have a question, our number is 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280, or you can tweet to us or send us a message via Instagram or Twitter. It's the same handle, @allofitwnyc. So, Megan, I want to read you a tweet and then follow up, and you'll see where I'm going when I read this tweet to you. This is T from Twitter. My mom never gave up details, but after she passed, I contacted the SC, South Carolina Public Library, which found obituaries, death certificates, and was able to trace her family back to her great-grandfather, born in 1829, and listed in the Freedmen's Bureau. Yeah. So what we're talking about here is tracing African-American lineage. has its own set of challenges. What are some of those challenges and any suggested workarounds?
Well, the classic challenge we always speak of is what we say called the Wall of 1870. Census records are a building block of all genealogical research, and 1870 is the first one that those who were formerly enslaved actually appear in under their own names. Prior to that, unfortunately, what you're dealing with is mostly property records if you're trying to find traces of your records, of your families. And this is why the Freedmen Bureau records are so valuable. They were created shortly after the Civil War, and it was sort of a banking structure. Unfortunately, it was mismanaged and collapsed, but not before leaving behind an incredible paper trail where people from all sorts of states got some assistance. And back in the day, when you opened a bank account of any sort, you had to provide a lot of information, a lot of family details. And so if you were lucky enough to find your ancestors in there, you might get their parents' names, you may get the names of their siblings, you may get stories that break your heart, because it will be, you know, stories like, my sister Jessie was sold down to Louisiana. Mm-hmm. You're going to learn so much if you're lucky enough to find your ancestors in that record set.
Philip, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, this is definitely a brick wall, and genealogy is really, there's a lot of detective work can be involved. And this is the classic African-American brick wall is when you hit the 1870 census. There are slave schedules from 1850 and 1860 that record slave owners, and they record people enslaved, but they don't name them. So we need to get the names of plantation owners and things like that, as well as, you know, as reaching back as far as we can go. So the Freedmen Bank records will include information about a plantation. There's also the U.S. Colored Troop military service records, which may also give. I've seen service records and enlistment rolls for the U.S. Colored Troop that identified plantation owners. So it's another way of kind of putting your ancestor in a place and a time which can be useful. I should say that the two of those collections are available. I mean, I don't want to push Ancestry, but the library pays a lot, or the people in New York pay a lot of money for it to be accessible through the library. So Ancestry Library Edition has both those record sets that you can search from home if you want to.
Let's go to Regina, who is calling us on line. I think Regina's on line 10. Hi, Regina's calling from Jersey City. Hi, Regina. Thanks for calling in.
How are you? Hi.
Doing great.
My project didn't really start out as a genealogical project per se. I just was a daughter trying to find out more about a mother who died when I was 8 years old, and I gathered family stories. But one of the places that I thought to contact was the college that she graduated, which was Reed College in Portland, Oregon in 1948, because I suspected that she might have been the first Black graduate of Reed. And so I thought, well, they had a newsletter that they published, and this was about 20 years ago, so I thought I'd contact some of her classmates, you know, hoping, I assumed that people would remember her, because it was kind of a remarkable thing for a Black woman to be in that class at that time. I did gather a lot of letters from her classmates, those who were still around, and people that remembered her fondly. I learned stories about her and her college life that I'd never heard from family, like a story about a local pub that refused to serve her and how the student body boycotted the pub, and it became part of a larger community protest and movement. And I also got the senior thesis that she wrote. And they, in turn, someone at the college referred me to the Oregon Historical Society, and that led me to an oral history that they had recorded with an uncle of mine who was a community activist. So just in speaking to the different places, or contacting the different places or organizations or institutions that I knew she had been involved in, led me to gathering so much information and so many conversations and letters and documents and now recordings.
Oh, bravo to you, Regina. Well done. You are quite a sleuth. Let's go to Kathleen, who's calling from Rockland County. Hi, Kathleen. What have you been working on?
Hello.
What have you been working on? Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh my goodness. So I've been doing genealogy research for quite a few years, And there was a lot of estrangement on my father's side of the family. He was cut out of the family when he was in his mid-20s. So I wanted to find out more about the family. So there were three interesting things that I found. One, I found his first cousins that he somehow had forgotten about by finding an obit in the paper, and the obit of his uncle mentioned three daughters, so that was really interesting. He also thought that two of his great aunts had died in the Holocaust, and when in fact it was other family members that died in the Holocaust. So I thought, I'm going to find out what happened to these two aunts. So they were traveling back and forth between the U.S. and I think it was Munich, and one came out in the mid-30s. The other one kept traveling back and forth and finally got out in 39. So through census records, I found out where the 1940 census, where she was living, and I mentioned the address to my husband, and it was the very building that he grew up in.
Wow.
The other crazy thing that I found was, again, because of the estrangement, I thought that my great-grandfather came here by himself. And again, through doing research and newspaper items are like super helpful, I found that, in fact, four uncles had arrived before him, and he actually had a family network when he got here. And one of the uncles was very prominent in Jewish philanthropy, and, mm-hmm. and he supported an orphanage. And there was an item about his funeral and all these people that came to the funeral. And then I found another item about a woman who Uh-oh. Was suing his estate, claiming to be his wife. And all these people came out and said, no, 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 you know, we don't know who you are. And then I found a census record with him in her household. So he had like this secret family, and what was so scandalous about it was she was Christian. So and he
Kathleen,
had daughters. So,
you have some stories.
So there's all this juicy stuff that you can find.
Yeah, you know what? You bring me to a great point, Kathleen. Thank you so much. Megan, this was my next thing I wanted to get to, because you've done genealogy work for many public figures, Stephen Colbert, Alex Haley. You mm-hmm. you discovered that Reverend Al Sharpton was distantly related to segregationist Strom Thurmond.
Yeah.
Advice for people when they come across something that might, you know, just how do you talk to people when they might find something that they don't want to know or that might be disturbing?
Okay.
What advice do you have for
okay.
people?
Yeah, first off, you're going to, because there is no such thing as a boring family, as you just heard. Once you go digging, you're going to find some stories. I don't know, people tend to think our ancestors are kind of staid and boring because they see those sepia-toned photos with the stern faces. But believe me, they were just mm-hmm. like us, you know, and some really worthy of your admiration, some total schmucks. It just sort of depends. You're going to find stories. When I find something and I'm in the position where I need to, well, for example, my own family, through DNA testing, I accidentally learned that my dad's only brother was really his half-brother, and I had to think, what do I do? How do I share this with Dad? Mm-hmm. And so I called him and I said, hey, if I were to learn something potentially disturbing about the family, would you want to know? And he instantly said yes. And so I told him, and he didn't bat an eyelash. He just, he instantly said, well, maybe that's why he had asthma and the rest of us didn't. He just took it very much in stride. But what I did is basically I gave control of the situation to him. I didn't force mm-hmm. the information on him. As to the individual, if you're the one who actually stumbles across it, I mean, having seen so many of these examples over the years, yeah, there's a transition period. You have to adjust to that new reality. But genies tend to be truth seekers. And so, yeah, once we get through that bumpy path, then we're just on the quest to find, okay, where's that other family? Who are those other relatives out there I never knew about? It tends to just, you know, spark the next round of research after a little bit of a lull there as you're adjusting to the new reality.
Yeah, we already got a Twitter. My brother found out my great-grandfather had additional children with another woman. My brother got to meet with one of them and was given photos of my great-grandfather. So it can have a happy ending. We're almost running out of time, but Phil,
yeah.
I wanted to get to you. And Megan, you can jump in here, too. We're getting a lot of questions about Ellis Island and where to start mm-hmm. with Ellis Island. Philip, can you give us some guidance there?
Where to find records of Ellis Island?
Yeah, like if somebody says, like, I want to go to Ellis Island and I want to start. Well, obviously, I can't go now, but when we can go.
Yeah, I mean, the record of immigration through Ellis Island is going to be the ship's passenger list. And the ship's passenger lists are available in different places. Family Search have them. Ancestry Library Edition has them, for instance, and a bunch of the different subscription databases. It's Ellis Island is obviously a controversial subject sometimes because of the myth of name changes. And it's interesting, Megan, talking about, you know, finding the truth. Genealogy is about finding the truth. It's a great discipline because people become researchers. They learn how to analyze evidence, come to conclusions, and they deal in finding facts, which I think is a skill that we all need nowadays. And with Ellis Island, it's, you know, this is a very long rambling answer, but the records tell the truth about names, mm-hmm. and about immigration, mm-hmm. I think. But those manifests are very easy to find. They are the ship's passenger list.
Well, Megan and Philip, our phone lines are full. I think we might have to ask you both back for a part two. It seems that people have some great stories and a lot of questions. You've been very kind with your time already. Megan Smolnik is former chief family historian at Ancestry.com and Philip Sutton from the New York Public Library. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This was fun.